This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batzler, chasing Michael Yon, _Yon, at _Yon to watch for his filings. He is in Yellowknife, the capital of the Northwest Territories. He's gone there for the aurora, for the night lights and the fishing. He also is there, of course, in his endless expedition to follow the migrant patterns around the world. The migrants are in Yellowknife. That's why Michael's there. What migrants and where they're from, and have they come from the Darien Gap, are all questions to be answered. There are also tourists in Yellowknife, genuine tourists. So, Michael, a very good evening to you. You went to Yellowknife for the fishing. How is it?
Actually, it came up for the migrants, for the aliens, for the invasion, but then went fishing. And, you know, the first time I came to Yellowknife, actually, I've been to 98 countries now, but the second country I went to, the first one being the United States where I'm from, but the second country was Canada. And I just finished a language school in California, the Defense Language Institute. And I drove up to Calgary with a special forces friend of mine to see his mother. And then we came to Yellowknife. So this is literally the second town I ever went to that was outside of the United States. And since that time, I've rarely been back to the United States. So now I'm back again for the second time. This is the fifth day, and seen a lot of aurora, went ice fishing, caught some fish. But actually, we were up here. We are up here because of Yellowknife is a, you know, clearly there's huge amounts of replacement going on. A lot of Indians, Indians from India and also natives as well. Huge amounts of natives of different sorts, like Inuit and other sorts as well. And then people from Somalia and Eritrea, a lot from Eritrea. I say Ghana, Uganda. Good Lord, so many. I didn't meet any so far from that said they were from Pakistan or anything like that. I'm seeing Sikhs all the time, of course. Pretty interesting. And so it's interestingly, during the lockdown for the so-called pandemic, a tour guide that we took yesterday and again today, he's from Hong Kong. He said his business was shut down for 2 years. They weren't allowing people not from Yellowknife to come here. And a restaurant that we ate at today said that they were in-house dining was shut for 6 months. And so this place was really locked down hard. And also, I was told by someone whose fiance is Inuit, said, a lot of the Inuit, they were not allowed to fly or anything like that unless they got the jab. It was very locked down. So then that happened to them. And the economy here is devastated. Everybody we talked with says the economy was devastated from the lockdown. And now they're saying there's a lot more homeless up here, which I'm seeing everywhere. Like there's a sort of, you might call it a mall down the road from me, like a 10-minute walk. And it's mostly shut down. And they say it's shut down. There's some stores that are still open, but it's mostly shut down because of all the homeless were using it to go inside. And so it's run off all the business. Michael, and now, interestingly,
Michael,
go ahead, sir.
Michael, this is not a homeless climate here. Your lake is frozen. It's still snowing out there. How do they survive in those conditions?
Oh, we're 250 miles from the Arctic Circle. This is like straight up. I mean, when you land at the airport, they got a stuffed polar bear baggage claim. There's no polar bears here. But
what are the homeless doing? Are they camping out in this climate?
Oh, they give them free meals and lots of alcohol. Everybody I talk with said almost every indigenous person that I see literally is drunk. I mean, it's everywhere I go. They're all drunk. I mean, like properly drunk, like falling down and slobbering. It's just unbelievable. The people here say the economy was just devastated. And then you saw those fires last year. A lot of Americans may have missed that because we got our own issues going on, but there were a huge amount of fires that came out almost simultaneously up in North Canada, including here in Northwest Territories. This entire town was evacuated for 3 weeks. There's like 20,000 people here. They evacuated the entire town. And with this one waitress at a restaurant that we just ate at, she told us how, you know, she had to evacuate, had to grab the dogs and all that. And we're racing. And she said the side of her car was burned and devastated. It was totaled. But interestingly, nothing burned in Yellowknife. There was no fire here. Everybody we ask about the fire say, why did they evacuate us? There was no fire within 20 kilometers. And yet it was very dangerous to leave. Like this waitress just told us that her car was, that she said when she finally got to Winnipeg, that they kept getting stopped by police. They're like, why are you driving this car? You know, what happened to your car? And she's like, we just came from Yellowknife and it, you know, all the paint was burned off and that sort of thing. And the tires kept going and, but they made it. But, and what's interesting is, you know, they were almost killed evacuating from a place that was actually safe.
Yeah, I remember that was a big controversy. The fire was outside the city, and then they gave the evacuation order, and they had to drive through the fire.
Yeah, imagine real leadership that would say, hey, give me all the men and boys. We're going to go fight the fire instead of we're going to run from it. You know what I mean? This is a town of 20,000 people. You could muster up a few thousand men and boys that could get out there and fight. Have the women take care of the back door here, and we go get it. You know what I mean?
Right,
chop down all the trees.
You drove across the Slave Lake. What was that like?
Oh, yeah, I drove across it a couple times. I've been out on these frozen lakes driving all. We were just out on a skidoo, one of those snowmobiles a few hours ago. They were literally going across the lake. Somebody was going across with a dog sled, a bunch of dogs, you know, like right out of Jack London, right? And so, yeah, we went ice fishing. They drilled a hole in the lake and sat out there under the, you know, it was dark the other night, and bright aurora flowing in the sky above us, and fish were coming out of the hole. Misako Ganaha, the Japanese journalist, she caught 10 fish. 8 of them were keepers, burbot fish, and we ate them. Very good fish. So, yeah, these people are living old school up here. Trapping and hunting is still normal, and you know, you can get proper, you know, real wool up here. You know what I mean? Can get real cold weather muckalucks and things
now
up here.
You say today you passed somebody who had just put a bear hide and a wolf hide up on the wall. Is that it?
I did. And I put that on my Twitter page, my X page yesterday. We had just driven across the frozen lake, Great Slave Lake. And we went to this town called, what's it called? Debit. I can't remember. Anyway, it's right across from Yellowknife. It's just, you know, drive across the frozen lake. And we came up there and we're just looking around and seeing things. And there's a giant bear tacked onto the corner of a house. And people say that's normal around here. That's how it's one of the ways they cure the hide. And on the other corner of the same house was a really large wolf. You can see, man, whatever was wearing that wolf coat before, you know, it got taken and tacked up on the wall, definitely could take a man. That's a proper size wolf right there.
Michael, is there your sense that the economy has recovered or is still suffering?
Oh, definitely suffering. The Chinese man who actually, we were in a museum yesterday. I love to go to museums all over the world. We've been to two here so far. But a guy came in and he was given a tour in Mandarin. And I asked him after, you know, he was with a bunch of people from Hong Kong and Taiwan and mainland China. And afterwards I said, hey, can you do that in English? And he did. He gave us a tour in English. And then I hired him. And so then last night we went out and, went looking around, in the, you know, looking for Aurora and that sort of thing. And then we hired him again today and, went out, you know, looking more, you know, looking basically at the surroundings. I wanted to ask him what happened during the lockdowns, what happened with that fire and, you know, why are all these natives drunk everywhere and, that sort of thing. And, you know, he said they give them free food and, you know, the natives that are, he said they're just being destroyed because they're, you know, nobody has any standard. Well, we were walking down by the city hall and one of the natives walked up to him and said, hey, Jimmy, his name's Jimmy, and said, hey, you know, can I buy a cigarette for $1? It's one of the very drunk natives. He said, he said, everybody knows him, right? And they're all drunk walking up to him.
Is there industry? I mean, fish? I mean, what is the industrial income?
A lot of the jobs up here, like we've been asking, you know, all around about that, but there's mining still and also tourism, but a lot of the jobs are actually just government jobs, right? They're just government jobs. And
so why the migrants there? I'm trying to figure out why you would come from Ghana or Somalia or Venezuela and go to Yellowknife if there is no work. What do you do?
You know, a lot of, believe it or not, if you look online about for taxis in Yellowknife, you'll see this place is loaded with taxis. And they say the one thing you never have a hard time getting here is taxis. And a lot of it, like every taxi driver that we've had has been, I think they've all been from Africa, right? And I don't remember any that were actually from Asia, but I think they were all from Africa. I haven't seen any Venezuelans, or if I have, they haven't volunteered that they're Venezuelans. But the they come up here and they work in hotels. Like a lot of the hotel workers here are all from different countries. It was the same down in Toronto, by the way. It was, you know, it's the Great Replacement is in full swing.
So your hoteliers are from other parts of the world.
I think all of them are. They all look like they're from different parts. Yep.
The porter on the desk and at the restaurant, was the cooking staff and the waitresses, were they from outside?
The owner of the restaurant that we just finished eating at, which had excellent steak, he was from Hong Kong. Now, actually, the waitress, she was actually from Yellowknife. She said she was originally from Yellowknife, and she was not not indigenous. So, you know, she was a Caucasian Yellowknifer. I said, "Are you actually originally from Yellowknife?" She said, "Yep, born and raised here." She's the one whose car was devastated, you know, escaping Yellowknife.
How about the storefronts, Michael? Are the storefronts empty or are they full when you walk around your neighborhood?
Oh, mostly not doing so hot. For instance, that mall that's just down the road, most of the stores were closed, but one store that was open went in there and got a nice wool jacket there. It was owned by a Vietnamese man, his English was perfect. In fact, we sat there and talked with him for 20 or 30 minutes. Very interesting guy. So he's lived in Yellowknife for, I think he may have said, since 1985. There's actually quite a few. Actually, the Chinese guy that gave us the tour, he said he was here from 1985 as well. Now, when I came, it was 1984, the first time. So this is the second time I've been here. The first time I came was 1984. The town was much smaller then. It's still small. It's maybe 20,000.
And the understanding in Yellowknife is that the migrants are welcome because they're filling up the services. I'm trying to figure out why migrants are there. Of all the places in the world, going to a permanent winter camp doesn't strike me as that attractive if you come from a warm climate. But I guess they're adapting.
Yeah, I've been saying that to every taxi driver and every other foreigner like me. I'm a foreigner here. I've been saying it's pretty cold here. You know, I'm from Florida, you know, and I will always ask them where they're from. And it's always Somalia, Eritrea, that sort of thing. Yeah. Quite a lot from Eritrea. But, you know, it's interesting, though. Go ahead, sir.
No, I'm smiling because you're naming warm climates.
they're all from warm climate. But actually, like one guy from Ghana, very friendly man. He's like, "Oh, I like it." You know, he said he was in Toronto for some years. When he came up here, he said he doesn't want to go back to Toronto or anything like that because he likes it, you know, more friendly up here. Interesting, you know, you know where this reminds me of is Luxembourg as one example. Like I spent, I don't know, almost 2 weeks in Luxembourg a couple of years ago. And it was, I mean, we were getting on about the 10th day before we met an original Luxembourger. And keep in mind, the last time I was in Luxembourg was about 1986 when I was in Special Forces, and it was Luxembourgers then, but now they've all been replaced with like Syrians and Pakistanis and Afghans. And so, I mean, when you go to Luxembourg City, which used to be the jewel of Europe, it's now, you know, very, you know, third worldish. It's third worldish and first world infrastructure.
Yeah, but Luxembourg, I can see the climate. As I'm talking to you, I'm getting colder. I mean, I'm feeling colder.
This place is like, again, it's 250 miles from the Arctic Circle. It's flat and the wind blows, you know?
Yeah, I got it. Michael Yan in Yellowknife, the capital of Northwest Territories, filling up with an international crew. And though it is springtime and my daffodils are blooming, Michael's over across the lake because it's still that frozen. This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor.